session number 10642, rule 3.
You want me to repeat that?
Yes, please.
Well, he said, I went to St. Joseph's College, which is in Beulah Hill. I said, well, I went to Gypsy Road School, which is in Gypsy Road, West Norwood. I said, we used to play youth football on a Sunday morning. He said, that's right. I said, where do you live? He said, oh, I live in Preston Road. So I said, oh, I live at the top of Auckland Hill. So we became very friendly, and being an NCO, that's okay. When we went to France, we used to have a night, we used to go down to a little estaminet, come cafe, have eggs and chips, which is the usual. And I never had a drink before I went to France of any sort, not intoxicating. And Bobby ordered a bottle of champagne, 5 francs a bottle. So we had that. And on the... we had another bottle, so that was 2 bottles. Never had a drink before, 2 bottles. And when we come away from there, it was a mother and daughter that ran it. The husband, he was an officer in the French cavalry.
What's that? You
I'll show you.
I'll
show you that later. And when we were going up to the aerodrome, I met a sergeant I'd met some time back. So he said, where are you going? I said, we're just going up to the drome. Oh, he said, come back. I've got a private billet here. Okay, went back. So he said, what are you drinking? I thought, well, I never had drink before. I've been drinking champagne. I said, you got any champagne? Yes. Yeah, I bought the champagne. So Bobby Butt, that's the corporal, he said, you haven't got any whiskey, have you? He said, yes. So Bobby Butt had a good skin full of whiskey. I finished up with Bobby Butt's 2 wrists. In my hands, over my shoulders, dragging him up to the aerodrome on his toes. Got up, he slept in the orderly room, which was a Leyland lorry, converted into an office. And all I did, I dropped him at the foot of the stairway, at the steps that took him up in there and let him come to. Anyway, I saw him next day. Poor old Bobby Butt. The last time I saw him was on the Crystal Palace Parade. Oh, back in the 1920s. Last time I saw him.
Did you make any real friends in France? From amongst the French people?
Yes, that particular mother and daughter. And then I had another family at... that was at Feen Villas by the other one. But the other one was... I got very friendly with, was at Bayeux. Can't remember the mother's name. The girl's name was Germaine, I know. We used to have egg and chips there. Oh, yes. As I say, the French is a nation, I don't like them, but the individuals you can get on with. Got to remember, they've let us down twice. You had 2 governments in the First World War. You had 2 governments in the Second World War. Messing about with their governments in the First. Of course, you had the Vichy government, didn't you, in the Second World War, with Duval.
Laval.
Mm.
Did you ever meet any of the VIPs of the Air Force? You were telling me earlier that you met Trenchard.
Yes, that was the only one.
How did you come to meet him?
Well, of course, you see, we go squadrons, wings, army. And he was OC 4th Army, and he was only 4 miles away from us, so of course he, being OC of all that lot, he used to come down to your squadrons, and that's where you meet him.
What kind of impression did he make when he came?
Well, to me, he was just a brigadier. Nothing more.
Was everybody frightened of him?
Well, in a way, yes. In a way. In some cases, they hadn't got much time for him. But I'll tell you one thing that Tommy Sopworth said. He trained Trenchard to fly. And Tommy said, he's a pilot, but not a good pilot.
I think Trenchard criticised his own flying, actually.
Yeah.
I think that you told me earlier that the King of Montenegro visited your aerodrome.
That's right, in 1916. We'd only been out there about a month or two. It was somewhere about the end of August, the beginning of September.
This was at Bayeux, was it?
Bayeux, yes. Don't ask me how to spell it. B-A-I-L-L-E-A-U, I think it is.
What did the Montenegrin king look like?
A short, stumpy man, very stumpy. As I told you, with his red doublet and blue pantaloons, his high boots with a tassel, a big sash, and these fancy daggers stuck in there, part of their dress.
And what exactly did he do? Just review the men?
He had been round to all the planes, you know, being shown by the OC, etc., etc. Then he came back, because this was a press photographer who took this one that you got up there, if you've still got it. And he came back, and there was just two of us standing there, and he was there. The press photographer was with us when he took the picture of him. And then when it was finished, he was guided the way back through the OC again. And who else did I meet? I tell you who else I met. I met the Prince of Wales, the Duke of Windsor.
When he visited France?
Yeah. Now, we were at Popperinge, and this staff car pulled up, open staff car. Two staff officers got to come out, and they stood beside another lieutenant and myself. And it was on the occasion that Marshal Pétain, the hero of Verdun, only got one arm, he was decorating the Guard Division with French honours. And the one that stood next to me turned round. He said, I suppose I'd better go and meet the old gent, and walked away. Now, he had a funny leg, you know. He had a bit of a trouble with one leg, slightly deformed or something. It made him showed in his walking.
And who I said, was this who had the...
Prince of Wales. So I said to the other lieutenant, I said, you know who that is? I said, that's the Prince of Wales. Sure. He said, you sure? I said, I'm sure he is. Anyway, it was shown in orders next day that it was the Prince of Wales was there to meet Marshal Pétain. So it was the Prince of Wales.
One thing we haven't mentioned about your combat activities in the Flying Corps in France...
Yeah.
Is German fire from the ground?
Yes.
What
was
it called, flak in the Second World War?
Flak, yes.
Did you call it flak in the First
no,
World War?
No.
What was it like in the First World War?
Not serious. You knew it was there and you saw it happening. But it wasn't so serious as what this is today. modern flack, as you call it. I mean, no way it's as bad as that. And it was all right, there wasn't a lot of it. No way. Then, in those days, they were concentrated on their big stuff. Mainly their howitzers, which were used for concentration on trenches. The Jack Johnsons, they called them, because when they exploded, it was a load of black smoke, and they were called Jack Johnsons, after the boxer. But they were howitzers. But the howitzers, it was a pretty hefty thing. Now, up at Yeeps, that's near the Menin Gate, there was a gasworks. And then the landing exploded, it turned one small gasometer completely upside down. Took it out of its seating, straight up, and turned it over, and it was standing on its upside down. That was the explosion from a howitzer. And of course, when we went up there to see these in the balloons, all the crew, officers, NCs, NCOs and men, were all sleeping in the dugouts built in the Yeezer Canal, the banks of the Yeezer.
Are you proud of having served in the flying corps?
Very. Very. I read everything about them. I read a book there, I don't know what that one is. I've got, it's up at my nephew, The Wind and the Wires.
You didn't come across a chap called Cecil Lewis in France, who wrote a famous book called Sagittarius Rising?
No. I can tell you that I can show you a book that's got every officer that survived the First World War.
Still serving. Going right back to 1915,
yes.
You told me that before that you were in the Royal Artillery.
Yes.
And that you joined the Royal Artillery.
Yes.
At 16 years old.
Yes.
Why did you decide to join up? Was it patriotic reasons?
Well, two reasons. The first one that I knew to join was a frequent visitor to us as a kid onwards, was my mother's stepbrother, or half-brother. It was he was the son of the second marriage. And my own friend, who was, when I was that age, he was 21, Jim Frost. Well, he joined the 1st Surrey Rifles, their headquarters, Flodden Road, Loughborough. And of course, he joined up, so I joined up. And that was that.
And this was in 1914, was it?
1915. January 1915.
But was that. So there was no sense of patriotism about it?
Well, I suppose I thought I was an Englishman, I'd be in the English army. I just got that feeling. And incidentally, I'd been in France for 18 months, home on leave, and my father had just been called up under the Derby scheme. Anyway, he eventually came out there, and I was out there at the same time as he was, but I never met him. Never got near enough to where he was.
Was there any pressure on you to join up, because people...
No! In no way. It wasn't until getting well in the First World War when these women, you know, with their white feathers, they were sticking them into men's coats because they were not in uniform.
So that wasn't happening when you...
No. In no way.
Did you ever see women with white feathers?
Did I what?
Did you ever see women handing out white feathers?
No. No. I wasn't even in the country when that was going on.
What did you think when the war broke out? When you heard
didn't think it would last long. I didn't think it was going to last long. I had a great admiration for the British Army. After war, we'd gone through, we'd had wars, the Crimea, the Boer War, all these wars, and come out on top. And I thought there was only one answer to it, we'd come out on top. Which we did eventually, but it took a long time.
What did you think of the Germans when the war broke out?
The Germans, well, I never had any... Actually, the whole point is, I always looked at it like this. Why were we fighting the Germans when we'd got a royal family that was half German? I couldn't understand why. Because the Kaiser's greatest ambition, you know, and his big thought was, he considered he should have been the King of England. Because one of Victoria's daughters married him, didn't she?
So you didn't hate the Germans?
No, I'd sooner have the Germans than I would the French. As a body.
So what did you think the war was about?
What was the war about? Money. Who reaped the benefit of any wars? Who does reap it? The manufacturers of ammunition, the manufacturer of guns, the manufacturer of planes, the manufacturers of uniforms. They're the only ones who reap any benefit. And the men who go there and fight are the ones who have to die. They pay the price.
But what people said that we went to war because of Belgium. Did you feel that yourself?
Well, there might have been the whole point is, right, they're getting a little bit near, but I don't think that was really and truly the bit. After all, we were tied up with the continent a bit, although the French, you know, had never forgiven us for burning the Maid of Orleans at the stake. They've never forgiven us for that, and they can't forget it. That's why they've been a little bit spiteful towards us. If it hadn't been for them, you know, we'd never have had these flying bombs.
In the Second World War?
No, in no way.
So, when you went to join up at 16 years and 10 days...
No, 15 and 10 days.
How did you manage to get into the army at such a young age?
They didn't know that, did they? To the authorities, I'm now 93. So I put 3 years on my age, because the age of joining was 19. They made it 18 in this war, the last war, but it was 19, so I went in telling them I was 19.
Did you look 19?
I don't know. Did they care?
So you think they really knew?
Right. They knew damn well I wasn't 19. But anyway, they took me, didn't they? So what?
What did your mother think about you joining up?
Well, I'll go back a little bit further. I tried to join before. In fact, I went up to Church Road, up in Norwood. There was a recruiting place there, and I went up to join the Royal Artillery. And I was to go to Woolwich when I was to be told of when to go. And I got a letter from the recruiting office to say they understood that I was of a certain age and they do not take boys' service. So it might have been my mother who put a stop to it. But she thought it was hopeless when I did it again. She thought, well, if they did it again, I'd try again somewhere else and so on. So she didn't say anything about it.
Did you do your basic training at Woolwich?
I didn't go to Woolwich.
Where did you do your basic training?
I do it there, Kennington.
How were you treated on the basic training?
Oh, all right. Treated fine. Yes. No bullying, never, none of that bullying. And when I went to the Flying Corps, the first job I was given there was up on the parade ground at Aldershot. I was given a squad to give their physical jerks and their training and their et cetera. And the next one to me is, and this is a true story, the next one to me was a corporal out of the Royal Fusiliers by the name of Newbold, and he was Ginger. Ginger Newbold, we knew him as. So I got this job because I'd already done 10 months in the service, and these were new recruits. And I was put in men who was old enough to be my father by a long way through their paces. In fact, in some cases, they were even old enough to be my grandfather, a young grandfather. And I was drilling them. Now, Ginger Newbold, he was a bit of a tartar. Some poor young recruit there, what had he done wrong, I don't know. He's only in the next squad to me. Called him out. He said, "You know Mrs. Newbold?" "No, Corporal." "No, but you'll bloody soon know her son." It was Ginger Newbold.